Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the third installment of the Definitive Newsletter Marketing Blueprint. So we've had a series of calls so far, the first of which was all about systems and the overview and why do a newsletter. It wasn't about systems. It was all about the overview of why you would do a newsletter and what you would get out of it. And then last week we did the design part, which was all about how to actually get your newsletter design started up. And this week we're going to talk about all about how you can get the writing and the content of your newsletter right, so that you actually have the right content in your newsletter. So I just want to welcome Zach to the call. He's going to be who I'm going to be talking to primarily about the design. Zach, you there?
Good evening, Ben. Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, at this stage, you've got a kick-ass design. Your newsletter looks good. If it doesn't look good and you haven't been able to use the templates and, you know, basically ask us some questions if you've got it, or, you know, perhaps upgrade, consider upgrading to the Platinum, where we'll actually help get your first newsletter out for you and get that template perfect. But basically, we've got that kick-ass newsletter, and now we've got to fill in those article sections of the templates, so that your customers actually read your newsletter. So, what we've got to figure out how we're going to do that. So I think the first question to probably ask is, why are people going to read a newsletter?
Well, I think the sort of the glib answer is because you sent it to them. And you took the time to write some content, put it into your newsletter, get your newsletter printed, put their address on it, pay the postage and all of that. Now, that may sound sort of a bit sort of simplistic, but, you know, most people, if you send them a letter that looks like they should open it, or it looks like they've received their letter from grandma, as we discussed on the design webinar, they're going to open it and they're going to see what you have to say, especially if they know who you are. Now, I know people are saying that, nobody reads these days, and I sort of think that that's kind of a bit of an exaggeration. I mean, consider that 50 Shades of Grey sold 70 million copies. The Harry Potter books sold 470 million copies. They were sold because people read them. And when you think about it, Harry Potter was actually read by a generation of people that were thought to be never going to read again. Generation Y were, that was the book they grew up reading. So people read, and they'll read what interests them. Ironically, actually, the Twilight series and 50 Shades of Grey both show that you don't actually need to be a particularly good writer in order to get people to read. You just need to say something interesting in a way that grips with them. Because I'm a bit morbid, I actually spent some time reading reviews of Twilight, and basically everyone that offered up any opinion whatsoever in the book review market, said something along the lines of, what's her name? Stephanie Meyer can't write, effectively. Stephen King actually went as far as to say that publicly. They don't, people bought the books and they absolutely loved them. And that's because Stephanie Meyer had something very interesting to say to her market. So, and that brings us probably to the next sort of very important point that people misunderstand about writing for your newsletters. People don't just read your newsletter to get information. They read mostly, actually, for a timeout experience, for a break, for some fun and for some entertainment. People also read the same sources of information, such as they read The Age because their mum read The Age or whatever your local paper is. So in Victoria, when you're growing up, your family either buys The Age or they buy the Herald Sun. So my parents bought The Age, so I always read The Age. That's sort of how newspapers work. You, you, it's almost that tradition stays with you for life. Now, on the newspapers, interestingly, I think most people actually read the comics first. I know at university that was sort of like what happened, you know. We could all get when we were students, you could get a car, buy a car that gave you, you know, let you get the Daily Herald, daily newspaper every day. 80% of the people that did that, I think all they ever did was grab the comics, went through the comics and then did the crossword in lectures when they were trying to slack off. But that's kind of beside the point. Look, if you people will read your newsletter, they'll respond very positively to it because you've taken the effort to send it to them. And, you know, if you've got something interesting to say, and the best acid test for that is if you can engage someone, a person, in face-to-face conversation about it, then you can probably write about it with a fair degree of confidence of knowing that it gets read. Now, marketing people out there do say that nobody reads anymore, but to be honest, I'm as a jaded, cynical marketing person, the honest-to-God truth is nobody knows how to write advertising anymore, and that's why marketing people are having the trouble that they're having. So just bear in mind that people will read what you send them if you write something that that's worth reading.
All right. Well, I mean, that's a good sort of framework. You know, it all sort of sounds high and mighty to say that, but how do you actually do that? How do you write so that it, you know, is engaging, so that people actually want to read it, so that, like you said, it's actually written in a way that they want to read that it. So how do you do that, Zach?
Okay. Good question, probably. Good question, Ben. So I think the first thing is you've got a bit of an acid test when you think, should I ever write about this in my newsletter? And the sort of the three things that you sort of can sort of see are, number one is, will this piece of writing or this article create an emotional connection between me and my subscribers or audience or customers? Your customers actually long more than anything else for an emotional engagement with you. Bain and Company's defection report that we've sort of mentioned from time to time cites that nearly 68% of people stop purchasing from a current supplier simply because they just wanted to feel appreciated. So appreciation is another way of saying emotional connection. So the first thing, you know, if you can do this, you know, will this article help me connect my audience emotionally, get them to know me, the person behind the newsletter, a bit better? In fact, I'd say that's probably the most important thing you need to establish in every newsletter, because if you actually sort of snuff out that emotional connection, then you're going to lose the chance to impart the next two things as well. The second thing you want content to do is you want to help make the reader smarter and keep them entertained. And this doesn't actually have to be limited to what you do, which is a second very common misconception about newsletters, that you actually have to put it all about your sort of your business, your subject area. So if you say you're a sort of printer. There we go. Manufacture ink onto paper. That doesn't mean all your newsletter has to be about printing. The same way that if you've been receiving our newsletter for any next length of time, you'll notice that it's not all about newsletters. We can we also include content in there that helps make your reader feel smarter about themselves or brings a smile to their face. So, and this is actually when we say we supply you with addictive custom newsletter every month. This is the sort of the content that helps meet this goal. It's all designed and written to help you so that you don't have to go out and find it for yourself. And what it does is you include it in your newsletter with the picture. They're going to read it, and as long as it's sort of you sort of go, yeah, that's going to be relevant to my customers. You go, what you've got is you've got you're going to. They're going to read that. They're going to either, you know, they're either going to be entertained by it, or they're going to feel smarter, and they're going to say, you know, have that at the water cooler conversation where they say, "Oh, you never guess what I read." And then the third goal for your content was you want to provide useful information to your customers to help them solve their problems. And often you want to do this in a way that helps them buy from you. You know, if you assess everything, you know, your newsletter, it should be helping you to achieve one of these goals. If it doesn't, then you're actually, what's going to happen is even though they're receiving your newsletter, they're going to mentally opt out. So they'll see your newsletter, but they won't read it. They'll just, you know, most common things once you mentally opt it out is it'll end up in the bin or they'll just sort of file away for future reading. And the reason for the mental opt-out usually is not enough information. Usually it's too much information and you're saying it in a boring way. There are plenty of other places, you know, you can go to be bored. And with the internet sort of sitting on our desk now, there are plenty of other places you can go to be entertained.
Yeah, no, I've definitely mentally opted out from a few things in my life. And I know email is a big one. I mentally opt out of virtually anything from anyone that I don't know personally. So, well, tell us a little bit more about this sort of mental opt out and sort of, you know, how we can maybe get around it.
Yep. Okay. Well, yeah, like you said, it's very common in email. So, where it's just, you just develop a blind spot to everything that's not, you know, like you've done, someone you know personally, I'm the same. If you, if I don't know who you are and you send me an email, odds are I'm probably not going to respond. So, yeah. And it's the same with your customers. Now, the problem with doing this with a newsletter is, and with a physical newsletter, is that, you know, obviously you're paying to have it printed and mailed to them, and they're not going to, and most of the time they're not going to tell you to stop. So it is very, you know, it is something that you have to be very, very diligent about avoiding. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to throw money down the drain. Now, So there are sort of six rules, I think, to get around that mental opt-out. The first thing is make sure that your newsletter doesn't scream of advertising. Make sure it looks and smells like information. So this is why I said that, you know, you need to provide information to help them solve their problems. You don't need to include blatant pitches for your products. Now, the other really good benefit to, you know, providing information rather than sort of just a name, rank, and serial number product pitch sort of thing, is actually as your newsletter goes along and it becomes seen as a steady publication rather than just something that shows up, it actually disables your customer sales defenses. So marketing materials are actually consumed adversarially until they're seen as information. So the classic age-old conundrum, nobody actually likes to be sold something, but people love to buy. So, you know, we'll sort of, you know, you sort of go into a store, salesperson asks, you know, can I help you with anything? Automatic response is no, just looking. But the moment, you know what you want to buy, you go and get your item. So, and then, you know, whatever it is, I'd sort of, bought a whole pile of books, loaded them up in my arms, had a grin from ear to ear when I put them down at the checkout. You know, that's the sort of thing, you know, we love to buy, you know, everyone loves to buy something, we just don't like to be sold. Now, the second rule for avoiding the mental opt-out is you want to sort of try and talk about yourself. People are inherently curious about other people. So you want to talk about things like your hobbies and interests, your family, your friends, pets, kids, or anything that sort of like you can bond over. So salespeople call this sort of thing in the sales process rapport building, where you're building, you know, a common bond with your prospect. It ties back to lowering people's sales defenses and just getting them onto sort of that out of that emotional they're going to sell me something state. So, who's ever heard of a sales pitch starting with, my cat the other day, she sort of was chasing a mouse and nothing happened. So it's the, you know, educating, getting that sort of that sort of content in there about, you know, anything that's about you personally and not necessarily about work is going to be, you know, is going to pay, you know, pay dividends in terms to keeping people engaged. They're going to be more interested in that than finding out about the three new features on the on your latest widget. So, and then the third rule is, and this sort of backs up, is, and I'm just going to say it, try to keep the hard sell out of your newsletter. If you need to hard sell people on something, either do yourself a favour and get a, you know, and send it in a separate mailing, or do it very, very infrequently so that people sort of go, okay, yeah, no worries, but we know the next one's not going to be, not going to be a sell. Not going to sort of be the same and try and beat me over the head into submission so that I buy. Probably number four is look at ways you can build trust. And one of those, so doing your newsletter regularly builds trust so that it shows up on the, you know, so this is why, and we'll talk about this in the systems webinar, but sending out your newsletter consistently actually builds familiarity, and familiarity with someone means that they're more trustworthy. So the more trustworthy you are, the easier it is for someone to buy from you. It's sort of that simple. So anything you can do in your newsletter to sort of build trust, some things you could do, you don't want to lie or misrepresent anything. You definitely don't want to be seen to contradict yourself, and this applies not just to your newsletter, but all of your marketing. Specifically in your newsletter, you might be able to debunk popular myths, you know, common myths in your industry. You'll be able to, you know, just tell the truth, because the truth is often stranger than fiction, and that's not how your competition's going to tell it. You know, they're going to be stuck in that sort of old school, most of them are going to be stuck in that old school selling where they just, you know, try and paint everything as a bed of roses even when it's not. You'll also want your, you know, sort of, you know, I've covered this already, but I'll go over it again because I think there's a couple of cool stories in this. You want to be, you know, when I talked about before about being personally interesting, I'll tell you just a couple of quick stories. So one of the clients doing a newsletter with us is a fellow named Peter Lane, and he's a mad keen harness racer. And so when Peter started sending out his newsletter, he actually, you know, he also put some people that he wanted to do business with on his newsletter list. And so he's sending them out. About, I think, probably 4 or 5 months into it, he sends out his newsletter and he gets a phone call from probably the biggest customer that he didn't have in his industry. Guy rings him up and so says, "I've been reading about your horse in your newsletter. Man, you must be a glutton for punishment." And Peter's like, why is this guy calling me? I've been trying to get an appointment with him for 4 years, and now he's calling me to talk about horses. So the conversation went on for probably, I think, 25 minutes about horses. Then the customer says to Peter, "Look, Peter, I've really got to go now, but look, can you call my secretary back and schedule a time where we can get together and discuss doing some business?" It doesn't sound like it should work, but it does. So this is why we talk about including conversation, including items about you personally. Those are the things that people bond to. Another one was one of our clients talked about doing Taekwondo, and we sent out a sample pack to somebody else who happened to run a Taekwondo clinic. And she couldn't believe she was reading about someone in a newsletter that was doing Taekwondo as a hobby. So, we spent probably 10 minutes talking about that at the start of the call. It's the same, you know, anything you can do to be sort of to build that emotional bond in your newsletter is going to avoid that mental opt-out like the plague. And then the final thing is to be entertaining. Be sure to include some things that are interesting, fun, funny. And absolutely has nothing to do with your business. That's probably the way you sort of get your strong transition from sort of, is this a piece of, you know, is this newsletter going to be a sales present? Is this a sales document, or is it a, you know, or is it actually a newsletter with useful news in it? Look, everyone, including your customers, leads multidimensional lives. So if you only write about sort of your products and services and what's happening in your industry, I can guarantee that, you know, not your customers are not going to find it anywhere as interesting as you do. In fact, they're probably very wound up in their own problems, their own and their own sort of, you know, their own little in their own lives. So just, you know, avoid the mental opt-out like the plague, and just use the six, you know, use those six rules to, you know, six rules to sort of keep your customers engaged so they aren't sending your newsletter straight to the bin or into the later pile.
Yeah. Look, I just want to, you know, back you up on that emotional connection type thing, just how important that is. Like, I've seen it happen time and time again, and we actually had another client of ours, Laser Mail, they had a woman call them up, and she got on the phone, and like Chelsea was saying, oh, she was talking like we were best friends, and I've never even talked to her before, and yeah, and then they ended up getting the sale after that, but she was just amazed by just the transition that happens as a result of those emotional connections that you can sort of build through your newsletter. So it's pretty amazing what can be done when you actually build that that they actually like you and trust you. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, if your customers are ringing up like you're their best friend, that means your newsletter is working like nobody's business. That is absolutely a home run.
Awesome. All right. Well, probably the next question, and I mean, you kind of talked about it, you know, not actually being salesy in your newsletter, but I mean, obviously you want to get some sales out of your newsletter. You actually want people to buy more, and, you know, we talked about they buy more products and they buy more often. So how do you get those sales and kind of get them to want to buy more without actually being a pushy salesman? Like, how do you sell in a newsletter without being a pushy?
Okay. So kind of a long answer to this, and it doesn't make a lot of sense at first. The best thing you can do with your newsletter is think about it as a kind of like a disguised sales pitch. Now, so there are a lot of people paid a lot of money by big institutional type companies to do what they're calling analytics or big data or data mining. Now, so if you have like a store credit card or a Flybuys card, you know, trust me, people are analyzing your purchase habits. So there's an interesting story I heard where Target kind of did a whole lot of data analysis, and they actually came up with an algorithm to work out which of their customers were pregnant so that they could market maternity wear and sort of all their maternity products and, you know, all and everything that goes with being pregnant to just the pregnant people. So they started sending out just pregnancy, you know, catalogs featuring maternity wear. And interestingly enough, one person sort of, when they did their little test mailing, one customer got really upset. He was like, I can't believe you're sending pregnancy baby themed marketing to my daughter. She's just 16. And the father obviously didn't at the time know his daughter was pregnant, but her purchasing habits had changed and set off Target's algorithm to say that she was pregnant. And so that Target, you know, and it turned out Target knew that this guy's daughter was pregnant before he did. That's the funny story that everyone passes around sort of about big data, which, you know, take out of that what you will. The follow-on to that, though, is Target actually ended up disguising those catalogs by putting a large chunk of maternity wear into the catalog, but not making it the feature, so that it was disguised, and people actually read through it and went, oh, okay, and then went off to Target and bought their sort of maternity wear, bought their baby toys, all that sort of things. And they actually had a really positive result on it. Your newsletter actually works the same way. So if you're going to project...
Just on that note, Zach, like, I think that just really illustrates well that point that people don't like to be sold to. Like, they love to buy, but, you know, if someone's directly saying, you're pregnant and here's your pregnancy maternity wear, you know, the people aren't as likely to buy as if they've just got a catalogue and they just happen to come across the maternity wear, because they like to buy, but they don't like to be sold to.
Yeah.
So, I think it just illustrates that a bit more as well.
Yeah, in that second situation, it's like, I need some of the, need that. In this case, it's an attorney where I better head down to Target and get it. The same thing will happen with your newsletter. So when you produce, so every month when you write a newsletter, here's the sort of formula I recommend. So with a 4-page newsletter, I'm going to have 2 pages of general interest content, and we provide this in our in the form of addictive newsletter content. So it should be a simple case of just cut and paste the addictive newsletter content into your sort of master newsletter template, and there's plenty of it in there. So just pick the things that you think, my customers would want to know that, or they'll be find that useful, or they'll have a laugh at that. That's the acid test for using your general interest content. I'd write a page of your newsletter about on you, a personal story, something that makes you personally interesting, a hobby, kids, your pets, your holidays. So one of our done for you clients did wrote an article about how he met Stephen Bradbury, the speed skater who won when everyone else fell over in Salt Lake City. Like, that's kind of a cool story. So, and you just want to sort of break up the sort of, sort of break up people's day with those 3 pages of content. And then the third thing to do, and then the fourth page, or the third item, terrible numbers, but that's okay. So, and then the fourth thing, piece of content you want is you want to write an advertorial. And an advertorial is, rather than being a sales pitch for a product, it educates your customers about a problem they have and how to solve that problem. And then that usually, and that should tie into a product or a service that you sell in your business. So, and we provide sort of, how many pages is the article ideas checklist? We've got 6 pages. There's 6 pages in the file of just, of different ideas of how you might be able to write different sorts of things for advertorials, and just talk about, solving their problems with your products. So, that's the best way to do it, is to, rather than sort of come out with a blatant sales pitch in your newsletter, what you need to do is write an advertorial, sort of take a problem somebody has and then sort of talk about all the impacts of those problems and then talk about how to solve that problems, and then you can put a little sort of in the bottom 10-20% of your article, put a little call to action so that they take the next step in your sales process. And if you actually go through a lot of our newsletters, you'll see that exact formula in action.
All right, cool. So basically, just to sum that up, we've got, so there's 2 pages of general interest content. So it's 50% general interest.
Yep.
1 page of personal or rapport building or relationship building type content about you, and one that's a kind of, I guess, a sales pitch in disguise, but it's that advertorial style, which is that silently selling type thing, which is just about a problem that they have, and then basically how to solve it, which is usually your product or service, or leads them to that anyway. Yep. So, all right. So now, before we sort of go on, other than that, because I know we've got the sidebar sections in our master templates, and we talked about it briefly, what would be put in there in the design module, but what exactly, what can we be on the lookout for that would, go in the sidebar well?
Okay. Sidebars, best filled with things like testimonials if you're collecting them, and if you're not, you should be, because it's far better to have your customers say, you are the greatest, than you tell your customers, I am the greatest. Is it more believable If I say Ben and Zach are the greatest newsletter people in the world, or if we have testimonials from our clients saying, look, thanks to Ben and Zach, our customer retention rates are up, we're selling more to each customer, they're referring like they've never referred before, which is more powerful, when you say it or when someone else says it? So collect your testimonials and feature them in your newsletter and put that, and yeah, they're a great way to fill up sidebars. The next thing is publicly acknowledge all your referrals. Now that does sort of no end of good. So the first thing that does is the people who have referred to you get a warm, fuzzy feeling because they've been publicly acknowledged. Remember when you're a little kid and you got an A on your test, you took it home and you showed your mum and your mum put it on got the magnet, put it on the fridge, and then everyone else in the family saw the A on your test? Publicly thanking someone for a referral in your newsletter creates that same warm, fuzzy feeling you had deep down in the cockles of the heart of your customers. Thank all your referrals for that. The second thing is the person who refers sees the referral if they get sent a newsletter. And the third thing it does is it actually creates social obligation that to be part of this news, to be receiving this newsletter, people need to be sending you referrals. So that's the, and then so what happens is they see that other people are referred and that those customers are bought and that they're happy. So the other, so everyone else that's getting your newsletter goes, yeah, well, they're obviously very good at what they do. I should, definitely should be referring to them as well.
So are you going to say something on referrals there is, one of the things we're going to be talking about in our Ultimate Referral Machine webinar, and for those who were early birds, you'll get this included, but basically we look at implementing a referral-type program, and if you have one of those, this is a great opportunity to just reinforce that without it being salesy. So you'd be like, oh, so these three people have referred people this month, thank you very much. As a result, here's what you're getting, here's what we're sending to them, here's the gift or the bonus, yeah, the thank you gift. And what that does is it's another plug for your referral program without it having to, be very, obvious, yeah, you saying, we have a referral program. It's just a subtle way to highlight it. So that's another thing. And just one more note for those people who haven't got the Ultimate Referral Machine. If you get in touch with us by email, we can let you know how to get that if you like, which is info@newslettermarketingsystems.com.au.
Perfect. Okay. Next thing on my list is welcome you aboard new clients. So anyone that's purchased, if you've got a lot of new clients coming along, just welcome your new clients aboard. Just to acknowledge that, and what that does is, in the mind of everyone receiving this newsletter, it makes your business look like it's prosperous, that it's growing, that it's growing, that you're successful, and that this is a good place to do business with. Now, this section is actually vitally important if you're ever going to send your newsletter to people that have expressed interest but haven't bought yet, or you have a long sales cycle. So, it takes most people 6 months to buy from when they first make contact with you to when they write you a check. This is often a great way to sort of bring that time in a bit, and also to increase your conversion numbers. It's just to show them that, again, this is like a social proof, well, other people are buying from you, so it's okay for these new customers to buy from you when they're ready. So welcome aboard to new clients. If you don't have heaps of this, thank everyone that's done business with you in the last month. That sort of, again, it shows, that lots is happening behind this. You've got lots of customers, you're successful, because people naturally want to do business with successful businesses. Another thing you could do in your sidebar is you could profile different staff members. This is, very important in larger businesses where, you might be writing the newsletter, but on a day-to-day basis, your customers are actually interacting with either like their account manager or different people in the organisation, so that they get to know who those people are that they're interacting with on a day-to-day basis. So so that, you know, they feel comfortable dealing with them. And then the other thing that does is just a word of warning here is make sure that you always, if you're writing a newsletter and there's a chance your staff could hypothetically poach poach your customers, and this is happens a lot actually in industries like beauty salons, where like the staff member will build up a client base while they're working for you, and then walk out the door, and they'll see that, and then you'll see that all the clients that you've built up for that person follow them out the door with you. So you can't just feature staff; you've got to feature yourself as well, so that there's a strong bond to you and to the business as a whole, not just the person they're serving. But you definitely want to be featuring your staff so that they don't, you know, so that your customers are actually comfortable dealing with them. Just with that, just that warning about make sure that you stay in the newsletter more often than your staff. Now, another one is running competitions. So if you can put a competition in your in the sidebars, and then finally another thing to do is anytime you've done cool work for a client, unusual work, especially if you want more of it. You can always feature a client in a sidebar and what you've done for them and how that's gone. It's, think of that like an in-depth testimonial, really. Then finally, the other thing to do, actually I just thought of just quickly, is you should be including a freestanding insert as another with every newsletter as a way to effectively sell more. So you see these in the newspaper all along. That's like where you get sort of like a lot of the times, like the supermarkets do their weekly specials in the community newspaper. You can take the same idea, put some sales material in with your newsletter. It's not, you know, in the envelope with the newsletter, but it's not part of the newsletter, and you can actually use that. And I just looking at the time, Ben, I think we should probably put together a little report for everyone that we'll do as an add-on, just called, you know, how to use freestanding inserts for profit sort of thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. We'll put together a few pages with some tips and tricks and maybe a few different samples or examples or something like that to have a look at. That's a good idea. We'll after we finish up all the recordings, we'll include that as an additional bonus.
Yep.
All right. All right, so that's pretty much it when it comes to, I guess, what to include in the sort of newsletter as far as the sort of writing the main content type stuff, and then also the additional stuff to be on the lookout for. Now, you're sort of talking a little bit earlier about the sort of advertorial when it comes to you know, trying to sell through your newsletter. And I mean, I get the theory behind it, and I think, you know, just more for the listeners, like, what, I guess, can you go into a little bit more detail and explain a little bit more how the advertorial type structure works?
Okay. Now, this is probably the easiest thing to do is probably work up an example and post it. Is it something to work along? And I'll just explain my thinking going into it. But before we delve into an example, I'll try and sort of give you the reasoning why. So advertorials, like we said, all along, are disguised salesmanship. And this is about creating sort of a more sophisticated marketing message. Now, I've sort of, in order to be able to cover this in the time, I've got to assume that, you know, you're familiar with sort of some basic copywriting things. You know how to write a headline. You understand the difference between features and benefits. You understand, you know, the concept of an ideal customer, and you know how to make a call to action. So when you write advertorials, are actually they're used by a lot of the best copywriters in the world when they have to sell both, you know, via direct mail and via sort of static internet pages. They're selling in the guise of educating. It's, you know, it's like we you know, like we talked about before, it's the difference between making someone buy something and, selling someone something and making them want to buy it. An advertorial is how you create, draw people to you rather than sort of go out like a used car salesman and punch someone in the head until they do buy. So I'll sort of delve into sort of a bit of an example of how I sort of come up with advertorials. So,
all right, cool. Well, I think with this example, maybe if like we'll kind of just get started now and then you can finish it off afterwards, and we might just post that as one of the resources as well. So, all right, so go on.
Okay.
I mean, what should we sort of use as an example? Any ideas?
Okay, so, well, let's use newsletter marketing as assistance as an example. So we're going to put one in our own, we're thinking of an editorial for our own newsletter. Okay, and so I've got up the article sort of idea checklist that we, I believe we're giving out with this. I think we are anyway. And if we're not, we are now. So we sort of going through. So step one, know your audience. We've sort of, Ben and I have amassed a lot of this already. So we know, step two is we know we want to achieve with our, basically this one, we kind of want people to, we know people like need to do a newsletter in order to get referrals. So we know that the next step basically is to call and schedule the next step in the sales and marketing process, which we call our existing customer opportunity audit. So we know that's the next step, and that's how we'll measure the success of this article. Now, the next thing is, what type of article do we want? How about we go with a barriers article? So barriers to getting more referrals. Does that sound like
that's something that would be, I guess, good to identify for our customers. What are the barriers to getting referrals?
Yep. Okay, so what's going to stop out? Someone could be listening on this call from getting more referrals. All right. So next step is you should always write an outline for your articles before you start. So I'm just going to start brainstorming now. And I'm just trying to think, what could be stopping people from sort of getting, what's blocking referrals in somebody's business?
Well, I can think of one. One would be like that they don't think your business is that good. Like, they're not happy with the service. They don't really think your business is amazing or anything worth referring.
Yep. Yep, that's definitely a good first one. And so let's start to think about, implications of that. Just if someone doesn't think your business is worth doing business, well, firstly, it means they're a risk of defecting. But from the referrals point of view, I mean, they're not really going to sort of say, oh, my dentist is average. Yeah, that's not really the topic of conversation at the barbecue, if your business isn't amazing, they're not going to tell other people about it. So we know that's definitely going to block them. Now, I'm just trying to, I suppose another one is people don't know that they're expected to refer.
I can think of that, because sometimes you're kind of like, well, if I want to refer someone to you, do I just, like, where do I send them? Especially when it's bigger businesses and there's not like a set person. Like if I wanted to refer someone to, a different company, do I just tell them I'll go to this company, or is there a sort of structure that I need to do to sort of send them to? So, that's something that would stop me from referring.
Yep. So there's two. Third one,
I can think of one. There's it's like with my car mechanic or something. I actually can't even remember who they are. Like, I got my car service, but I might kind of know where they are, but I haven't heard from them since. So, I guess I don't remember who they are.
And that's, I've heard the similar story actually with mortgage brokers and people that have customers for a very long time but don't interact with them very much.
Yep.
So the same sort of problem. So yeah, okay, we've got our three topics, and so now we sort of need to so from here it's a simple case of okay, that's the guts of the article. We sort of it's a bit of a case of put together a headline that's going to sort of get people in to read the article, and then the other thing we've got to do is just get it set at the start. You sort of need to supply some emotional information. Getting a bit upset with the status quo, so that they're emotionally ticked off about, yeah, I should be getting more referrals. Why aren't I? God damn it! That's, you know, once they're at that sort of start, they're going to go, yeah, this is really useful. And then you sort of present your three roadblocks in this case, and then you sort of summarise the situation, and then you make your call to action. And so, what I'll do is we've got the article. I'll go and bang that out after this call, and we'll that way you can sort of. But that's sort of how you do it. You sort of want to educate someone about a problem. You don't want to. So if that was a straight sales pitch article, it would, for newsletters, it would have been, you know, do a newsletter, sort of get more referrals, sort of, you know, that sort of crass salesmanship. Whereas this is like. I'd like to get more referrals. And then they're going to refer. Oh, that's why I'm not getting more referrals.
It will be the way
to do that.
Yeah, I like it because if they decide to do a newsletter or not, they're still getting value from the newsletter. And whether they take action or not, they're still getting, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Value.
Now, the other thing worth noting is two of those problems actually have nothing to do with the newsletter. So you look at it, look at problem one. They don't think my business is amazing. Doing a newsletter isn't going to make your business necessarily amazing. So, you know, that could be a whole host of, you know, that could be customer service problems. That could be, you know, your terms of trade are too difficult. It could be any number of problems. It could just be that the customer service person at the front desk shouldn't be there.
Like grumpy old woman, yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to block referrals whether you do a newsletter or not. Number two, similar. You can certainly address that problem in a newsletter, and we do that by thanking our referrals and creating a culture where it's safe to refer people. But again, if people don't know that they're expected to refer business to you, they're not going to refer. So that's again neither here or there on the newsletter front. So that's actually a really handy, you know, that's genuinely useful information for, you know, people that have sort of said they're interested in getting more repeat business and referrals. And then the third problem is actually addressed by a newsletter, because a newsletter shows up every month in their mailbox like clockwork, and it mentions the company. So, you know, got a much better chance of them remembering who you are if you're showing up in their mailbox with a newsletter every month. And, you know, and they're actually reading it because, you know, It's not a pitch fest. It, you know, shows up on time, so it seems like a publication, and it contains useful information rather than blatant sales material. So I think that sort of sums up sort of how to write, you know, advertorial writing fairly succinctly in the amount of time we have. But because this is why we do this for our customers when they actually do it. Have us do their newsletter for them. We actually offer an article writing service for people that don't, you know, feel comfortable. And so, look, for those of you that do it yourself, you're going to, it's the best that I can do, barring get you to take a whole lot of copywriting courses.
Yeah, no, I think it certainly gave people a structure. And I think having that one article to reference, plus included, you know, we will have a few samples of our previous newsletters, plus you'll also be on our newsletter list on a monthly basis, so you'll have our newsletter every month to read and get some inspiration about and have a look at some different articles, and you've got the ideas checklist. There's all sorts of resources here to really make writing easy, but
there's over 100, sorry Ben.
You go on,
there's over 100 different article ideas, seed ideas in the checklist. So, I mean, if you don't know what to write about, I don't think we can help you if you read that. I mean,
Yeah, no. First-hand experience. I've used that, and there's no way you can read that page and not walk away with 20 ideas. And if
I challenge people
to that, actually.
I wouldn't. That's not the sort of person we want to be talking to. But no, I'm with you. That's why that whole resource got created. It was to give everyone different ideas about what they could talk about in their business that might actually be useful. So, now, just quickly, actually, there's one other thing I do want to just cover off that I realised wasn't in the notes I sent over, Ben.
Yep.
Okay, and that's, I'd like to talk a little bit more about client spotlights and featuring sort of what you're doing with your different clients.
Okay.
Because like an editorial, these are often structured in a way that's, in a sort of non-salesy way that educate your clients about other services you do. And this is actually a great way to sort of feature types of work that you're doing. So when you have lots and lots of different products and services, you can show how different clients are using them in different ways in a hope, and so that your other newsletter recipients can actually see how to do that. So, and I'll just sort of talk to this fairly briefly, but basically for a client spotlight, what you do is you talk about, and we feature these in our newsletter from time to time, and they all use the this sort of same formula, and we sort of include this very, very sort of there for you, so that, we'll include this with you as well. So the first thing you sort of want to do with that is you want to, when you're writing a sort of client spotlight, the first thing you want to do is you want to feature who the client is and what's sort of going, what the deal, what's going on with them. So you talk about, about the client, who they are, what they do, and then go on, and then sort of, then you talk about what their sort of the client's challenge, what they were trying to, what their issue was, what they were trying to achieve, that sort of ties into your product or service. So, and again, what we'll do is we'll include a couple of our sort of client spotlights in with this, along with this checklist. So, in order to do this, and this is another great sort of educational soft-sell way to get people to go, yeah, I've got that problem, I should take up that product or service.
And then you've also got the social proof built in with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's automatic social proof because you've done it for someone else, therefore it's good to use. The next thing is sort of what were the impacts, what were the costs of it, of their issue, challenge, whatever it was. You need to quantify them. So, for example, if, the cost, someone was like, doing an email newsletter, but they couldn't retain their customers. So if we could talk about what happens, talk about the business they lose in, say, years 3, 4, and 5 of the relationship because the customer's using another vendor, that sort of cost, and all the better if you can put a figure to it. The next thing you sort of need to cover off is, how have you helped your client overcome that challenge, issue, or accomplishment? And so this is actually where you sort of, where most people would start their sales pitch. You talk about what you've come in, what you've done, how it's, and what you've set up and for them. And then you talk about the results of what you've helped them with. So say you're a, another example that this would be, say you're in, you do search engine optimization, getting people onto the front page of Google. Your results might be within 2 months of working with us, they've gone from being on page 8, they're now ranked number 2 for three of their 5 keywords, and they've come in from page 20 to page 2 on the other 2 vital keywords. Those are the sorts of results, and you go, if you're sort of wondering, do I want to be front page of Google? And you go, wow. And then especially like if you can say that's turned that into a revenue figure in that case, you've got I've been on the front page of Google. It's making me an extra 20% of sales every month. And you're going, okay, I could use an extra 20% of sales. This stuff will get me on the front page of Google in 2 months. You know, it's sort of automatically you're like the guy that can do that. So, and that's how you sort of structure your client spotlight. And that's really sort of as simple as I can, simple as it needs to be. Then, and then usually we just wrap them up with a testimonial. And it's sort of that before or after type of testimonial is the best sort. So before I started working with, it's the Charles Atlas 98-pound weakling testimonial. Before I brought Charles Atlas's bodybuilding kit, I was a 98-pound weakling. Now I'm 250 pounds of pure muscle. I beat up the bully on the beach. It's that type of before and after.
Cool. Well, I think that's been really helpful, actually, Zach, to go through the customer spotlight, because it is one of those things that unless you've sort of been in and around it and you've done it before, it is somewhat of a new concept to some people. So I think it'll be really good for people to have those examples as well. So we'll include a couple of those in our resources as well. Now, we're probably ready to wrap up now as far as writing and content goes. So is there nothing else you needed to cover off on, Zach?
I think that's probably about it. So I think that's probably as good as it's going to get tonight. So,
all right, cool. Well, I mean, if we just quickly recap, I mean, we've covered quite a lot today, but we really just started by looking at basically, you know, why are people going to be reading a newsletter? And, you know, you mentioned that it's a whole array of different reasons, to be entertained, to just because it's what they've always done, that time-out experience. There's all sorts of reasons. And we basically wanted to look at how we could engage them. And, you know, there was three main goals of the writing in a newsletter, and they were the emotional connection that we wanted to build.
Yep.
We wanted to either make the reader feel smarter or keep them entertained.
Yep.
And also provide them with useful information to help solve their problems. So basically, if we could do that, that was what we were aiming for. And above all else, what we wanted to do was actually avoid that mental opt-out. So you sort of went through some quick rules on how to avoid the mental opt-out. Now, I'll quickly just tap on those. So firstly, to just not be seen as advertising. Your newsletter shouldn't be seen as advertising, and it should be information, rather. Also, you want to be educating your customer about you.
Yep.
You don't want any infrequent or hard selling, or if it is, it should be in a freestanding insert and very infrequently. You want to be building trust with your newsletter. You want to be making yourself interesting. And you also want to be including interesting, fun, funny, entertaining content in there as well. So if you do all that, you'll really avoid that mental opt-out. Then we went into a bit more detail about how to sell without being a pushy salesman. And we talked about the formula that you want it to be 50% general interest, one page of personal story, and one page advertorial.
Yep.
And basically we went into detail about some different things you can be on the lookout for your sidebar. So your testimonials, thanks for referrals, welcome aboards, new client welcomes, staff profiles, competitions, client spotlights. And also freestanding inserts is another thing you can also be on the lookout for and ways you can use them. Yep. So
we'll put together that little report over the next couple of weeks. So it'll all be there for you.
All right. And the other thing, you've done the example, which we'll put up. And finally, you mentioned about the customer spotlights and case studies, and we'll also put up a few examples there. So, God, we've gotten through a lot in one hour, in an hour. So
I
think it's an hour on the dot now. So that's basically it for the content and writing webinar. Next week, we are going to be going through systems and basically how do we get this newsletter out each and every month reliably, like clockwork, with as little hassles as possible. So we'll go through the details of everything that goes into getting a newsletter out each month, everything from the planning stages through to all the nitty-gritty details of putting it together, and then the printing it and working out where it's got to go, who you're going to use, how it's going to get printed. And
We're going to go through all the nitty-gritties and show you the systems that we use so that we get it out each and every month, so that you can use the same systems or a variation of them to get your newsletter out so that it's hassle-free, so that you're not doing one or two issues and then getting overwhelmed and stopping. So that's what next webinar is all about. And arguably, I think it's probably the most important webinar, and it's what, for us, we took the long time getting right, because getting this right allows it to go out each and every month. And consistency is probably the most important thing when it comes to newsletters. Publications don't just come out every few months here or there. There's a consistency to them. So that's what you're in for next week. We'll stop the recording now and we'll ask some questions.